Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levin.
Reporting live from the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C. If you are mugged, well, you're going to get a lot of concern and love from your friends. Are you okay? Were you hurt? Were you scared? You think they'll catch the guy? Everyone is supportive. You were mugged. But when you are a victim of sexual assault or domestic violence, the questions are very different. Why were you there? How late were you up? Why were you with him? What were you drinking? What were you wearing? You wore that dress? I dare say a victim of a sexual assault feels more violated than a victim of a mugging. If you're mugged, sure, you'll be scared, you'll fear for your life. But you won't have your body violated. If you're a victim of sexual violence, you get those questions. If you're a victim of domestic violence, and today, October, is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, the questions are slightly different. Why did you marry him? Didn't you see this earlier? Why didn't you call the police sooner? Why are you allowing this to happen in front of your children? Different questions, but still questions that victimize the victim, that attack the survivor, that put the focus on what the survivor did wrong, that judge the survivor and make the survivor feel shame, when the only person who should feel shame is the perpetrator of the violence, the sexual predator, the violent jerk who can't control his alcohol and did acts of violence. They should feel the shame. And at a time in Washington, Republicans are pushing the stigma, the very stigma that encourages sexual assault survivors, domestic violence survivors, not to speak out, is the same stigma Republicans are pushing right now in Washington. She doesn't remember everything. Why not? Why didn't she say something earlier? Why was she there at all? It's not just our disgusting president of the United States who says these things. You hear it all the time. You hear it on Fox News. You hear it from Republican senators. You hear it from people who should know better. I've been fighting against domestic violence and sexual violence for a very long time. Many of you know that my own sister, 22 years ago, was killed by her husband, leaving behind a 2-year-old and a 6-year-old, and that it took us 10 years to get justice, and that the law and the courts did not support the survivors of domestic violence. I had to work to change some of those laws. I'm still working as a Virginia delegate to change some of these laws. Basic things, things like domestic violence and sexual violence should be considered by courts in custody cases. Is it that hard to understand why? I'm working on it. But at a time when Judge Kavanaugh and his supporters are encouraging survivors to shut the hell up, I want to encourage you to speak out. Survivors are all around us. If you yourself are not a survivor of sexual violence or domestic violence, you know many who are. They're all around you. They're your family members. They're your work colleagues. They're your close friends. And if you don't know they're survivors, it's because they may be afraid to tell you. They may be afraid to tell anyone. It is up to you. It is up to us. It is up to all of us to let our friends and family and colleagues know that we are open to hearing, that we won't be judging, that we won't be asking these offensive questions. We will listen with an open ear. And when we hear credible allegations, we are going to act upon them. I'm not optimistic about Kavanaugh. I wish I were. And that doesn't mean I'm going to stop. We know that Senator Heidi Heitkamp of North Dakota came out today as a no on Kavanaugh. I think we're going to get a solid Democratic front against him. That requires two Republicans to join in. And it's not looking good. I think we can get Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski, maybe. We still need one more vote. It's important that Susan Collins, Jeff Flake, Lisa Murkowski, it's important as a matter of record that everyone know who was not interviewed. There's a wonderful op-ed in the Washington Post. I'm going to quote from it now. I've posted it on Facebook. Of people who were not interviewed by the FBI. Number one, a suite mate of Kavanaugh, who has told The New Yorker, quote, he remembers hearing at the time about the incident Deborah Ramirez has recounted. Remember, Debbie Ramirez is the woman who, as an undergrad at Yale, was preyed upon by everyone that made her drink. One of the many problems with sexual assault perpetrators is they tend to prey on the most vulnerable. And so when they prey on people who are in the wrong place at the wrong time, or who they push to have too much to drink, or who have a reputation, that just makes it harder for them to speak out after they are attacked. In Debbie Ramirez's case, she recounts how they had this drinking game where everybody made her drink until Brett Kavanaugh pulled down his pants, thrust his penis in her face as everyone gave raucous laughter. You know, these accounts are all different and all very similar. They all involve Brett Kavanaugh trying to impress other men by degrading vulnerable women. Those people who think sexual violence is about sex know nothing about sexual violence. It's about control. It's about power. It's really more about sadism, enjoying someone else's pain. It's got very little to do with sex. The suite mate's name, we know his name. It's Kenneth G. Appold, A-P-P-O-L-D. And he says he is, quote, 100% certain, unquote, that he was told at the time it happened that the person who exposed himself to Debbie Ramirez was Brett Kavanaugh. And he says he never discussed this with Ramirez. But he does say he wants to tell the story to the FBI. But the FBI is unwilling to hear from him. That's number one. I give you number two. Classmate of Kavanaugh's at Georgetown Prep. You'll recall that Kavanaugh said under oath that all those statements in the yearbook about the Renate alumnus, about Renate Dolphin, you remember that. All these guys were Renate alumnus. You know what you do as an alumni. You go through school. They claimed it was an innocent joke, except it was an innocent joke that she didn't know about. She didn't know about until this year when a reporter told her about it. He said it was to show affection. Well, we have a classmate who has put his name on a statement to the FBI that says, quote, Kavanaugh talked repeatedly about Renate Dolphin as, quote, someone that everyone passed around for sex, unquote. Someone, quote, that everyone passed around for sex, unquote. He said Kavanaugh said that about Renate under oath. Now, you might say, well, that's just mean. Boys can be mean. It's not sexual assault to be mean. But check out the pattern. The pattern of degrading women to impress men. That's what Kavanaugh's all about. Degrading women to impress men. Is this someone you want on the United States Supreme Court? Then there's the case of James Roche, one of Kavanaugh's roommates at Yale, who has said that Kavanaugh regularly blacked out, lied under oath about his use of drinking. Now, I happen to know someone who knows James Roche personally. A high school friend of mine, whom I trust implicitly, a very good person, went to Yale undergrad with James Roche, knows him well, and tells me that James Roche is absolutely to be believed. James Roche said Kavanaugh was regularly stumbling drunk. Roche says that, and there'd be tremendous numbers of witnesses to this, that there was so much vomit in the dorm room that it was never cleaned because Kavanaugh would come home on a regular basis, drunk, stumbling drunk, and vomiting in that sink. Now, it's not a crime to be drunk. It's not a crime. I mean, he was underage, but okay, fine. Underage drinking is not a reason to stop someone from being on the U.S. Supreme Court. This isn't a question of what Kavanaugh did 36 years ago. It's a question of did he lie last week? And clearly he did. He lied under oath to the Senate Judiciary Committee. James Roche has also not been investigated by the FBI. This would be easy to confirm. Other lies by Kavanaugh. Yes, I'm going to talk about boofing. Sorry about that. I promise I'll do it after the break. We'll be right back, right after this.
He's a Bible-quoting, Constitution-loving, flag-waving, red-blooded liberal American. He's Mark Levin. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levin.
I was talking about the people who have not yet been interviewed by the FBI. But coming up in the next segment, I want to talk about the brave people who are speaking out. And they include some people I'm very close to. I'm going to talk about your stories. I'm going to have more time in the next break. Let me finish. Let me finish with the lies of the guy who wants to be a Supreme Court justice. And I'm going to have to get a little crass here because, well, I'm describing something crass, and there's no way to accurately describe it without saying what it is. I'm told, I didn't know it, but I'm told that boofing is anal sex. And the reason I mention this is that Kavanaugh testified under oath very strongly that boofing was farting, flatulence, that they were 16, he said. That's all it was. Boofing was farting. They were making fart jokes. But the yearbook says, quote, "Have you boofed yet?" That's what the yearbook says. Kavanaugh saying, "Have you farted yet?" That seems not believable. The anal sex reference is much more believable. Now, you'll say this is a tiny, stupid, crass thing. And it is, except that why is Kavanaugh not telling the truth? He didn't even say, "I'm not sure, but I think it was." Devil's Triangle is not a drinking game. Devil's Triangle apparently is a three-way. Brett made it seem like he was a choir boy. There's more. There are dozens of people who could corroborate the allegations against Kavanaugh. Dozens of people who knew Ford and who knew Ramirez. Dozens that the FBI has not contacted, according to NBC News. The Washington Post reports that Ramirez's lawyers gave the FBI 20 people, more than 20 people, who would have relevant information. But the FBI did not interview any of them. Dr. Ford's legal team put out a long list of additional people who have not been contacted by the FBI. Some of them were going to corroborate what she had said in the past about her being a victim of sexual assault by a federal judge. Finally, neither Ford nor Kavanaugh were interviewed by the FBI. Remember when they investigated Hillary Clinton for somehow being at fault in Benghazi? Remember when they gave her exhaustive interviews about her email practices? Can you imagine them doing an interview of her without interviewing her? We don't even normally do FBI background checks for presidential candidates. But we do them for Supreme Court justices. I am really concerned. I'm concerned that the confirmation of Brett Kavanaugh will send a terrible message to survivors of sexual assault and domestic violence. I've been listening to these voices for 22 years. I've always stood up against abuse. Domestic abuse, sexual abuse, abuse to teenage survivors of residential boot camps. We must hear these voices. We must believe these voices. We must fight back against attempts to shut them up. This is Mark Levine. I'll be right back right after this. But really focusing on the message that elected officials are giving to survivors of abuse, survivors of domestic violence, survivors of sexual assault. This is a massive worldwide phenomenon, and it's been going on for millennia. This ain't nothing new here, folks. Men have been abusing women, primarily men. There are male victims of sexual assault. There are men who abuse men, and very, very rarely women who abuse men. But men have been abusing women since humanity has existed. And it's all over the place. When my sister first told me that her husband had threatened to kill her, I didn't think he'd do it. In my defense, she didn't think he'd do it either. I come from a warm, loving, supportive, functional family. I didn't think that domestic violence, sexual violence happened It's hard to admit this, to people like me, to people like those I loved. I was wrong, clearly. But there's this idea that it doesn't happen in good families. It doesn't happen in those families. It only happens to those people of that ethnic group or that. It's all over the world, folks. Every country. And God knows it's here in the United States. And it's happening right now. Statistics are hard to find because sexual assault, domestic violence are very rarely reported. Every year I attend what's called the Rally Against Rape in Arlington, and I hear dozens of mostly young women, some older women, a couple men, tell their stories. Seems like though 90% of the people telling their stories are 25 and younger, and a huge number are girls in high school. And 80-90% of their stories, just based on what I hear in Arlington, Virginia, are people that have never told the police. Indeed, maybe half the stories are women who've told their stories in public for the very first time. This isn't reported, and it's not reported because of the stigma. And that's why I am so moved by the courageous people who are speaking out and saying, me too. One of them is listening right now to this very podcast. My friend and fellow delegate, Wendy Gudaitis. She writes on Facebook, I was a target of sexual predators at ages 11, 12, 13, 15, 18, 21, and 23. I was more fortunate than most in that I was able to fight these men off. But my husband and I protected our kids intensely and role-played with them from an early age as to what to do if faced with a predator. My early experiences taught me that there would always be men who wanted to take something from me that I did not want to give. Diana Deming asks, why aren't more men speaking out? I think, Diana, that too many men don't realize this is happening. Too many men don't put themselves in the shoes of women. Guys, think about it. You walk the streets, but women are told not to walk the streets alone at night. My mom taught me when I take a woman home to wait until she gets in her house. Make sure she's safe. And yeah, vulnerable women are vulnerable no matter how wealthy they are. It doesn't buy you protection. Guys, think about what it's like to be vulnerable all the time and to have to be wary all the time, not to be wondering all the time. We don't have to do that. Well, gay men, to some extent, have to do that. Brett Kavanaugh doesn't have to do that. Brett Kavanaugh didn't have to worry that someone's going to attack him. He was the attacker. This morning, I was at a meeting in Fairfax, Burke, Virginia. It's a campaign by Fairfax County, Virginia, to make the call, to encourage survivors of domestic violence and sexual violence to make the call to let their voices be heard. I spoke out, as I have in the past, about what happened to my sister who was murdered by her husband. I told the story of how, after he killed her, he ran to Mexico, took the kids. It's a long story. I've told it before, how I fought to help bring the kids home. But the point of the story in this context is that my sister didn't tell me, and we were very close, she didn't tell me about her marital problems until 2 months before she was killed. She told my mom, confidentially. And she didn't because of the stigma. The stigma that attaches to victims and not to those who really should feel ashamed. She didn't want people to think that her marriage was less than perfect because it would be a reflection upon her. And she also didn't want to leave because she had kids and she wanted to protect them. When she was killed, she couldn't protect them. Two of my elected official colleagues were there as well. Both shared things I did not know before. The sheriff of Fairfax County described how she, as a girl, had been a victim of domestic violence, how her father would beat her mother and her siblings and herself, how she would call the police and the police wouldn't help, and how she was beaten for calling the police. And then my friend, Delegate Kathleen Murphy, did something very, very brave this morning. She courageously stood up and said how she had been sexually assaulted as a young woman long ago and also had not shared that information for many decades, just like Dr. Ford. That was very, very brave of my friend and fellow delegate. Painful and oh so necessary. It is all around us. And if you don't know it, you're not listening. If you don't know it, you've closed your mind to it. I'm so proud of my colleagues. I'm so proud of Delegate Gaudetis and Delegate Murphy and Sheriff Kincaid. I'm proud of anyone who speaks out. I'm proud of the survivors of abuse as teenagers that I've helped who are, I also know, listening to this show right now, for speaking out, for telling their truth, for fighting to stop abuse. We all have to stand up for each other, my friends. And let me share a piece of political organizing wisdom from some of us early activists in the gay rights movement. One of the things that we gay men, lesbian women, bisexual people have learned is the power of coming out. Coming out of the closet is a profoundly personal thing. It's hard to do. It's the right thing to do. And it's a political act. If one person is gay, is out, that's them, that's a stranger, that's someone I don't know. Two come out, five come out, 10 come out. That's just a small group of people. 10, 100, 1,000 come out. Then your work colleague comes out. Then your cousin comes out. Then your sister. Then your son. Then your best friend. And now it's not, who are those gay people? It's, that's my friend. That's my sister. That's my son. That's my father. That's my aunt. Don't you be talking bad about my aunt, my father, my sister, my brother. That's me. Coming out is the single greatest political act the gay and lesbian community and now the transgender community has ever done. In coming out individually, personally, telling our stories, we have changed the whole dynamic. We have caused people who thought the idea of gay people marrying was ridiculous to be our strongest defenders. Merely by saying, this is who I am, and I'm afraid because of prejudice, but I'm going to say who I am anyway. I have a plea to the tens of millions, if not 100 million, survivors of domestic violence, of child abuse, of sexual violence throughout the United States and the world. Come out. Tell us your story. I know it's painful. I know that some people are going to ask you some really terrible questions, and some people are going to put you on trial. And I want you to know that they are wrong, that they should be ashamed. How dare they blame the victim and not the perpetrator? If we're ever going to change the culture that creates this stigma, we have to come out. We have to share our stories. We have to be very brave, like Delegate Murphy and Delegate Koditis and Sheriff Kincaid. We have to tell our stories. And you know what? People of goodwill will listen. Dr. Christine Blasey Ford was an amazing witness. It was clear to anyone who listened to her. She was telling the truth. She wasn't angry, even though it would be easy to be angry. She's gotten death threats. The guy who tried to rape her is about to get control over women's bodies for a generation. There's every reason for her to be upset and angry and crying and blaming and all the horrible stuff that we heard Kavanaugh do, this privileged jerk who might not get what he wants. Power over all of us. But no, she humbly went to the committee and told everything she knew. And when she didn't know it, she said she didn't know it. She was honest about it. And we're at a historic moment. And there is reason for despair, right? I mean, it's 27 years since Anita Hill. And people supported an FBI investigation less now. Actually, people, I mean Republicans. They opposed an investigation now. They proposed giving Dr. Ford the minimal stuff they gave Anita Hill. And Anita Hill was sexually harassed. She wasn't sexually assaulted. So, yes, I concede there is reason for despair, but that's the wrong reaction. If you go home and lie under the covers and cry, it's understandable, but it's not helpful. The only way we change the culture in America is to fight with every ounce of our soul, to tell our truth, to tell our stories, and to listen when others are sharing theirs. And if elected officials won't listen to victims of abuse, they shouldn't be in office. If they have a deaf ear to your cries, It's time for you to get organized. We have an election in 1 month. This is America's chance. This is your chance to let these deaf elected officials to scream so loud that they can still hear you in their new jobs. Of course you're going to vote, but that ain't enough. No, I mean get organized. Have you talked to your local Democratic Party? Do you know how to go door to door? It's not that hard. You can do it with friends. If you don't want to go door to door and meet people, and I got to tell you, I've done this as an elected official, 90% of the people you knock on their doors are actually very pleasant. 10% aren't. You'll get over it. Make some phone calls. They'll give you lists of people. Talk to your friends. My God, you have more influence over your friends than you think. Have you talked to those friends of yours that you know don't always get to vote and made sure that you insist with every ounce of your being that they vote? Heck, you'll drive them there. It's up to you, America. If we reject this historical moment, we'll wait for another generation. I don't want to wait. The time is now. This is Mark Levine. If you want to call in, it's 888-48-MARK. 888-48-6275. We'll be right back after this.
Never confuse Mark Levine with right-winger Mark Levin. The second name stands for empathy, which the other Mark lacks. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275.
Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. Got just a little over 2 minutes, very little time and a lot to say. First, let's go very quickly to John in Butler, Maryland. Apparently, there's another definition of boofing.
Yeah, hi, Mark.
Hey there. We don't have much time, John. Make your point.
Understood. Yeah, boofing involves introducing alcohol or drugs through your rectum, like using an enema.
Got it.
And people do this for two reasons. Number one, it gets into your bloodstream real fast.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing is you can pass a breathalyzer test.
Interesting. Thank you for sharing that. I didn't know that, and thank you for sharing that. And by the way, that makes...
It's also called butt chugging.
Okay. Thank you. And I'm just going to have to hang up because I've got a few more things to say. Thank you for sharing that. That also fits the yearbook reference, Have You Boofed Yet?, which is not something someone would say about flatulence. Two more things I should note. First of all, a reporter who is a Yale alumni, Elena Plott, reports that Jeff Flake, is still having issues, and his colleagues are trying to walk him through them, and he's reaching out to my good friend, who I went to Yale Law School with, Senator Chris Coons. And I have complete faith that Chris Coons will do everything he can to convince Jeff Flake. I want to end by addressing something that Deborah Carter said. She said, we're exhausted, Mark. Since Trump's been in office, it's like being trapped in an abusive marriage. And you're right, Deborah, it is. It is exhausting. It is abusive. Indeed, it is exactly what survivors of domestic violence and sexual violence talk about, the regular abuse. And all I can say is this, and I say this as someone who's talked to Holocaust survivors, the only way you live through abuse is to fight it with every ounce of your being. The moment you give up, you succumb. We have to keep fighting. This is Mark Levine signing off.